This is the session about profilers, and let's find out how you guys feel about using the profilers and what you know about them. Maybe I can learn something from you. Actually, that's the goal for me. I'm not trying to pass any knowledge to you. I want to learn something from you.
Always
what?
Always wrong.
Wrong. Profilers are always wrong. Do you guys use any profilers?
Like, yeah.
Which one do you use?
Actually, YourKit
or Visual VM. Okay. You?
JProfiler.
You?
YourKit.
JVM. JProfiler.
Visual
VM. Okay. Okay. You? All right. So I spent some time last week looking at what kind of profilers there could be. All right, let's try.
Maybe it will work.
So I spent some time last week looking at what kind of profilers there are out there for Java at all, like any of them. And it turned out, or it seemed that around 2004, 2005, 2006, there were like a lot of them trying to start, and they died immediately. And so if you think about what kind of profilers that are alive today, there are two commercial ones, JProfiler and YourKit, and then one open source profiler, which is basically Visual VM or NetBeans profiler.
Right? JConsole has
or
a small version
it's
of it.
Basically the same. let's group them together, JConsole or Visual VM and NetBeans. There are some other profilers that are not meant for using by developers. They are like monitoring stuff, like APM kind of tools, New Relic, AppDynamics, Dynatrace, Willy Interscope, and so on. So maybe you don't even know those names.
Yeah, there's actually a pretty new one from some guy in Australia, I guess. The one with marks you kind of dot things.
JInsight?
I don't know, maybe.
Yeah,
I can't remember the name.
You can't download it. So it's either doesn't work, or it's a vaporware, or if you can't download it, you cannot try it. It doesn't exist. So, yeah.
You have a simple world.
Damn it. Why do I have Gmail? Something else. Lambda, whatever. So I'm actually working on Xrebel, which is, people say it's a profiler, and we were not aiming to make it a profiler, but people wanted to be a profiler, so we will say, okay, we will not fight the users and make it a profiler, okay. The goal for this session was that I want to learn from you guys what you actually are chasing in profilers and why you're using them, and what do you find, what do you see, what can you derive from that information that you actually can get with the profilers? Is it any useful at all, or you just find the problems by accident?
Well, I would say it really depends, especially if you use sampling mode. You have to run it for a long, long, long time to have enough sample points. If you use tracing mode, for example, in YourKit, it gets horribly slow and might totally change the behavior of your application. So it's hard to gather real data. But still, you sometimes get the point at, okay, there's a method that really takes a lot of time, so maybe I should look at that.
Okay, but
maybe one more recorder is Java flight recorder.
Flight. Okay, Java
mission control.
All right, yes, that's one. But it's not open source, right?
No,
it's not open source, but it's free.
No, not really. It's free for development, but not
yes.
It's part of GDK, so you can use.
No, you cannot use it on your production. In production, you have to pay the license.
It actually claims to use a parameter, unlock commercial features, which tells you everything. It unlocks a commercial feature.
All right, but let's take a step back. You are using the profiler when you know that there's something wrong in the application.
Not usually. We're using mission control for
just always to monitor
yeah.
stuff in production.
Yes.
And you pay for the license?
Hopefully.
No?
Sure he does. Sure he does.
Okay, that's not for the record. Anyway, let's amend this mission control for me. Let's think about the normal developer use case, not for monitoring. So you have the production problem, and then you take the profiler. Or you just, out of the thin air, you decide, okay, let's use the profiler.
Yeah, sometimes if I want to have a look on the scalability of an algorithm with 10, 100, 10,000, 1 million, I only check what's going on. For example, if I'm using third-party libraries, if the creation of objects is increasing dramatically, or if there are some hotspots in the third-party code that I can identify quite soon. It's only to have a look at it. Okay. And I'm using it quite fast in a project, only to see what's going on if I have some...
Yeah, maybe we should think about what profiling means to us. Is it memory profiling?
I want to get there, but yeah. I want to to get the information about what kind of problems do you actually have in production that you need the profiler for identifying this problem.
Only performance.
Where the performance goes? Is it the database? Is it
what you try to figure out.
The very common assumption that the bottleneck is always the database.
If you don't have a database, it can't be an assumption.
Right.
Maybe it depends if you have monitoring or not. So, for example, we have monitoring for GVM, for CPU, and for database CPU. And if you see two graphs, and for database, it starts to moving like that, so your problem is in database. But if database is quiet, but your GVM CPU start to doing that, so that's the problem inside.
This is you're saying by the data that you see in monitoring, right?
Yeah, of course.
Not in
our monitoring, we don't even know our servers are working or not. So
okay.
How to do it?
No, but as a developer, on your local machine. Constrained environment, how do you figure out?
For example, if I have SQL, NoSQL, data store, doesn't matter, and I have some nice mapper or wrapping tools, first I check how much time will be burned in the driver and for network and for the database itself. So sometimes
I usually profile.
Excuse me?
How often are you profiling again?
If I'm exploring new libraries, for example, and I decide all this functionality I want to use, and I have my first tests, then I have a small short look at it to see only what's going on. Only to have a feeling about it.
So how long do you run your test?
Sometimes.
And normally you use sampling mode, I guess, right?
Sometimes only a few minutes. I ramp up and then a few minutes, sometimes over the weekend if it's running and I want to test, if it's the memory hole or whatever.
So the difference is sampling mode means the profiler gathers some information and some step traces at save points. Every time you hit a save point, the profiler looks into all the step traces and takes this information. What is that exactly?
Sampling.
Okay. Yeah. The other way is tracing mode. That means they use bytecode enhancement or bytecode changing your actual classes and adding a point to every method in entry and every method exit.
I don't think you're right about save points. So the way sample profile works is that CPU basically initiates an interrupt.
No, not in Java. In Java, it's actually only on save points. That's why sampling mode is always wrong.
You're talking only about JVM right now.
That is why sampling mode is always wrong about your code. The problem is if you have a very, very, very short method, mm-hmm. it probably never shows up in a save point because it's so fast.
Mm-hmm. Basically what you get the closest save point to the hotspot.
Right.
It also depends if the method is getting in line or no.
Right.
For example, if you play some sort of assertion or exception can be thrown out of the method, it could prevent inlining.
Okay, I guess I was looking from that side, I was always looking from the VM side.
Yeah, so the only real sampling mode is probably looking into CPU registers.
I found
it's only what?
Looking into CPU registers, like with, what is the
VTune.
Right. I forgot the name.
I found a great way how to debug this, so the problem is to disable just-in-time compilation, so you are running in the interpret mode, and then just hit exit button, and wherever it's stuck, there is probably very likely a good chance it's a hotspot, and if you do that five times, you get a very good idea where is the problem.
So I was actually, I didn't have the license of JProfiler to show it to you, but I had the evaluation license, so I recorded the video of profiling session JProfiler, and it
doesn't
it,
matter, it's okay.
It looks like a little bit bizarre. Let's see. So you have a running application, you start JProfiler, and nearly half of the video is the bootstrapping. How do you actually start configuring, you know, figuring out what you need, what you don't need to start profiling?
JProfiler is very, very...
it's very sophisticated. It gives you a lot of stuff, right?
Yeah, it's very verbose, and it's configuration options. It has maybe 50 times the configuration options from your kit.
Oh, your kit is basically the same.
Yeah, but you just say,
if you don't
okay, tracing
deep
sampling, I want to have memory,
right,
profiling,
right.
I want to
so
have...
So you disable all kinds of stuff if you don't need them and they are on by default, and do you actually, have you, like, JProfiler users, have you ever bootstrapped
yeah
it this way? Like,
yeah,
every time you do this
I created a template.
Oh, really? You can save the configuration.
Templates.
Yeah,
you so you have profiles of profiles.
I get about 20 profiles.
Okay. All right.
And,
well, your kit is much more simpler because it's using, I don't know, it's embedded feature for connecting to debugger, so you don't even to specify an agent for connecting to.
But JProfiler is the same.
Yeah,
same.
You don't have to add an agent.
If you start,
I remember that a few clicks, so you open up or
you
yeah, say,
you,
yeah,
you,
running
but you can configure a lot of stuff. The problem is, the more you configure to be enabled, the slower your application gets.
Yeah, or maybe.
So you try to yeah, so you try to have at the least valuable information enabled.
So. Like classical functionality of profiler is like tracking the memory allocations, right? And CPU profiling, either tracing or sampling, and maybe thread deadlocks.
Yeah,
blocks,
blocking.
Whatever. And then there are like a bunch of new features that are being added to the profilers in these years, like a couple of years. And the probes and databases, they try to monitor
SQL.
The application level monitoring, basically, right? And have you guys used it? No? Never? You always look into timing and stuff? And
only a few times in the direction of databases, only to see what's going on with the statements, but not really in detail.
What I cannot run this sort of stuff on the production servers or even on the development servers, because profiler has some sort of overhead and you cannot simply. It's not beefy enough, so I would.
But in development?
If I need to replicate some sort of profiling issue. For example, running this sort of stuff on the Amazon cloud is just suicide.
Oh. Okay.
So I usually have some sort of log files, and I can basically replicate most of the stuff which is happening on the server.
Mm-hmm.
So about profiling tests and stuff like that. And I usually run this sort of thing overnight, and overnight collects the sensitive results, and I can. See the results.
Okay.
For this critique, for me, the feature is a JProfiler. If you have an allocation of the new objects, JProfiler can actually show you the spec trace where the hotspots of newly allocated objects are, and it can show some sort of filtering. It can actually show the garbage collection, garbage collected objects, and non garbage collected objects, and stuff like that.
Okay, but what's the scenario again you like? When do you use the profiler?
I usually have some sort of performance aggression, and I usually have a good idea where the customer is complaining.
Okay, so basically you have done the development, you have released the product, you have deployed it, and then you have an issue.
Yes.
Okay.
So what
would you do to prevent that?
Well, I have a regression performance tests and stuff like that. But if user complains about the performance problem. I ask them to run scenario with a logging enabled. It usually spill out like gigabyte or 10 gigabytes of data and stuff like that. And I can replay those in the development machine.
And how often does it happen?
Once a month, I would say.
Okay, so once a month you have an issue that leaks into production even though you have performance testing like incorporated in the product process.
I would say it's, you can simply cannot already like we have sort of test driver development and before we actually deploy in the future we are test the regression, performance regression and stuff like that, but
okay. Yeah, so here it shows now the database query for queries for instance and that's the clinical application. Here's Hibernate, so all the statements that are being executed to database, they are prepared statements. So the parameters are dynamically added, right? And here you don't see them. So you can see which statements when were actually executed, but you don't know are they connected to any request. What was the request actually that caused those invocations? And you didn't have the context. There is actually a way to get that, but you have to know the tool really well. There are like multiple points multiple paths how you get to this information. And then, okay, you get this parameter, but if you have like let's say 10 parameters there, there will be not replaced in the question marks. You have to pinpoint which parameter was which question mark. And so on. And what also annoyed me, okay, it's solved by the templates, but you have to enable every single piece of functionality, like one by one. Let's see how much do I have there. Okay, in here you do have like servlets, and maybe you can connect later to the SQL statements, which server actually was responsible for.
Yeah, I think what you are looking for is more like app dynamics, showing the whole request in just one view,
multiple
servers.
I'm more like XRAML actually, but...
Well, but XRAML doesn't support views of multiple servers, does it?
It's in works.
Yeah, so you're heading in the way of app dynamics and other APM systems.
Oh, it's not...
It's not
an APM,
for production.
It's not a profiler, it's not an APM, but maybe like not everyone knows what it is. Chris knows, but I will just show. So
if you have multiple servers, you have to connect the Rust Check profiler to one server and see what's happening.
No, if you have an APM, it's more like a production monitoring solution. So you configure like different servers and for example, you have database and you have two application servers,
yeah.
And your request arrives at the Tomcat and goes to some application server, and he requests data from the database. So your APM monitors all three data, all three servers, and when a request arrives, it gets a unique ID, and over all the things, it measures the unique ID and it shows you exactly in the graph when it went from one server to another and how long it actually took to deliver data and kind of stuff.
So it's transaction monitoring actually.
Yeah.
The scenario for development would be that you have a front-end application and a back-end application, and front-end is just serving the HTML and actually uses web services to talk to the back-end application. And the back-end application is a RESTful service, but it also goes through the database. So you have two applications, one is talking to the user, another one talking to the database.
But how now is JProfiler, which path all the request is going?
JProfiler doesn't know.
Yeah.
It actually has support for multiple VMs.
Yes.
At least there is a demo of how to use it with RMI calls. You have to be a ninja to actually do that.
Yeah. You have to.
And with XRAML, what we are doing, it's not a profiler yet, it's a tracing tool, whatever. And the scenario, or the idea of the scenario, is that you're using it all the time, not when something happens in production and you have to debug it, but rather like a convenience tool that will tell you, hey, there's maybe something wrong, right? Even before continuous integration. So, for instance, this form, right? And it tells me, oh, dude, there's 20 queries to actually render this page, right? And you're just rendering one single list, which is like strange. And you get to the point where, okay, you have like a trace from request through the stack trace. The stack trace is actually much longer if we like remove the filters. And you see then which queries were executed, and from there you might derive the information, okay, there is n plus one issue. Like, and you get the queries with normal parameters substituted. You can just copy paste and execute in, you know, normal dedicated tool. And also you get like the event stream as well, like see how many queries were like executed, how many rows each query returned, when it was executed, how long it took to execute, and so on. More like an introspection into your application, what is currently happening. Doesn't aggregate stuff. Like normally in Profiler, you run the session, as you said, right? For some time, like several minutes, you aggregate, you collect the samples, and you get summary. But you don't get really the slow requests, which you get APMs in production after you have deployed it. Right.
I have another question about the SQL queries. What about if the requests are coming back from a database errors and kernels? Is it also possible to?
In theory, it would be possible. It's hard to implement. How do you see it technically implemented? Like, I mean, on application level, how would you get the request?
Maybe you want to get all customers, and you just get, you want to get 1 million customers, and first of all, you just need 100,000. And when the user is going to the next pages, and you just show each time 100.
Oh, it's not asynchronous. It's type pagination.
Yeah.
You just get windows. Asynchronous in terms of database would be that you have a request, then you have like a spinning thread that goes into the, let's say EGBs are a good example of that. They are happening in the different thread actually, and then you don't have the like real connection between the request thread and EGB thread. This is asynchronous. Right?
Do you have your application running in a single EGB?
This one?
Yes.
This current?
And is it possible to have like service architecture and monitor all the services that we're involved?
This is what we want to do. Like if you are talking about development scenario, not about monitoring or deployment, right? Then there is a 30% of users who want to like to develop distributed application in a distributed fashion. You may even have one JVM running, but you have different applications deployed on the same domain, for instance. This is a distributed scenario already.
And is it working already, or you?
For us, no. For us, not yet.
What about NoSQL queries?
It's already not in this version that I have, but we do have working
Mongo
stuff. Yeah, it's an IP build. It exists actually. Web services and NoSQL. Which NoSQL, for instance, do you use?
MongoDB.
Okay, MongoDB was like the one that we have implemented actually.
For web applications only, or?
Yes, the scenario is that the assumption is that it's a web application. It doesn't matter if it has a front end, HTML front end, or maybe it's just RESTful third service, right? For normal web applications, I mean, normal, that have a user interface, we do inject this widget here, right? So you would normally just navigate here and get the assertions that something might be wrong, and you get to the root cause. Or if you have a RESTful service, let's say, imagine this application is a RESTful service, and there's nothing, there's JSON coming out. So you wouldn't see this widget in there. So you
rather have something like this and get this widget on a separate URL.
Mm-hmm. But for desktop applications, not available.
Desktop applications, it's a bit, like in here we have the assumption that there is a request response cycle.
Mm-hmm.
In desktop applications, you might track user actions as those entry points,
REST calls or whatever. So you can still measure the REST API, for example.
But it doesn't work this way for desktop applications. It's just an idea. Currently, we are just focusing on web applications.
For the desktop application, it's best to write your own tool. Basically, if you do this snapshotting every 5 seconds, you just take all the threads, all the snap cases, and it's also pre-filtering, so you can have an event loop and set up some other IDE stuff. It's very simple to write some sort of log file on it.
But where I wanted to get is that you guys all said that you are looking into like CPU profiling or memory profiling. You are not looking into application level profiling. Like our users are looking into application level profiling, but they are asking about the same features that you just mentioned, right? CPU. And if you are looking into this trace right here, we do have some numbers there, right? But those are not the numbers for. They're not measuring the method invocations or self times or whatever. It's just.
I will
make it bigger.
It's a wall time, right?
No, it's not a wall time. It's not a CPU at all. It's
wall time is not CPU.
Whatever. It's not time of the execution. It's time of. In this branch, what you can see here is the total time of the queries being executed. In that code branch, right? And what people would like to see is like the profiling information actually from.
Yeah, I think if you could divide it in how many CPU time, how long waiting for the network and stuff like this.
So
this, what's the next detail?
How do you feel about this idea that like normally if you look at the application, like simple one, you have a request coming in, you have like some time in the browser, some time in the sometime in the CPU, whatever Java application, Java classes, and then sometime in I/O endpoints, right? No SQL, no SQL web services, files, whatever, right? And then from there you could browse to the problem. If you have this, let's say, we had a test with one startup in the city where I live. And their page renders for 20 seconds, and 5 seconds is the database queries. And 15 queries is what? Probably the Java classes, right? Maybe processing the results from the queries. And then you would obviously like to see like this time budget. Where does it go?
Well, on the other side, if you are using Chrome, then you can see for some pages how long it's waiting, and so you can add this information with developer tools from Chrome. Not so in detail, but you have an idea.
In Chrome, it's all front-end, it's all what is happening in Chrome, right? But this is all server-side. They're just letting you know in your face that there's something maybe
but
wrong.
It would be nice if you could have a plugin for Chrome, for example, combining this data from the server side with the view from the browser side. So to combine both data, this would be nice. So you would calculate. Yeah, something like this. So timeline for how long you're waiting for and stuff. So that you don't have to figure it out by yourself. So if you could combine it.
But still it doesn't give you the information of CPU time spent on the service.
No, I'm not care about
this. Remember there is some kind of standard for this kind of timelines for networks for loading information directly into this console. So I don't remember which one tools did it for web requests. So you can execute web request it will do something, and it will generate a specific file for opening in Chrome timeline, and it will show you all information about queries. It will look something like that, but it will be.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember I have read that. There is something that I mean for at least. Currently, I guess Chrome is the only viewer for actually that file format.
I also want to bring up kind of another view on these things is there is a simple tool that allows you to measure the hiccups that are not because of your application or GVM, but rather the system-wide hiccups. And there is a cool name there for J-hiccup, which is basically an agent you add to your Java library. Well, it's proclaimed that's like almost zero overhead, or next to zero overhead, and sort of that helps you to see quickly maybe the stalls that you're seeing are not caused by Java application, but rather
actually
network, file I.O., whatever.
Actually, I have a problem with Java agents. If I want to use JRevel and JHiccup at once, it's not possible because both are Java agents.
Okay.
Wow. So agents are not always a good thing.
They crash or what?
No, you can just pass one agent.
No, you can pass two agents, three agents, four agents, how many?
That is new. It wasn't that in the old versions of Java. How can you pass more than one agent?
Minus Java agent, minus Java agent.
Oh, really?
Java agent, yes.
That works?
Spring also had some sort of tool which actually which was like.
Yeah, I know that. That is actually a trick to do that.
And it was there for years, like. Or
yeah, but that is a trick. They just combine multiple agents. It seems to be new that
you can
pass multiple agents on command line.
You can totally do that. Currently, I have this application running with JRebel and XRebel, and they are separate agents.
Okay, cool.
And if I started it,
I learned something new.
Like
woohoo!
JRebel and XRebel.
Okay, cool.
So
I didn't do that.
This is very good about JHiccup. It's kind of cool.
And JHiccup is actually nice too.
It's insanely simple, but
so our idea is that you get the profiler in front of the development cycle rather than trying to debug the issues that you already have.
Well, in front of development, you do design.
Before that, you do spec. Before that, you do vision.
Normally, if you develop a web application, you have some kind of front end, anyways. Even if you're a back end developer, you need to try something.
Uh-huh.
So either you have a REST service, and you can look into the REST service, like using a tool as JMeter, or you anyways have your web application, and
mm-hmm.
you're clicking yourself through it because you changed something and you want to try it.
Mm-hmm.
More question about this Java classes profiling. There's sampling and there's tracing, right? How often do you use sampling? How often do you use tracing? Which one is preferable?
From my experience, I start with sampling, trying to get an idea what actually happens, and then I'm used tracing with a very, very, very light scope of classes to measure.
So you
use
the feature only to those classes, right?
Yeah.
All right. What I found is that it's either one or the second, right? And all the profilers have the scenario as you.
Yeah.
Like in the beginning, you select which one do you. Sampling doesn't take much of, or it doesn't like have a big overhead, right? What if
you
have
can play with sample time. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, for first time.
But still, it's just save points. And save points means it's. Just
okay, it might be 20 milliseconds,
part of
the
application view.
Just to see.
What if you combine? Have you thought ever that it could be combined? Sampling and tracing all together at once?
But I think it could be misleading because some values are more meaningful than others.
Because if you're talking about sampling, it's more like getting like a picture of your code, right? If you are talking about tracing, it's mostly useful when you have those endpoints in your application, especially I/O, to measure how much the I/O takes. Actually, but I haven't really seen people trying to figure out in the middle of stack trace that something takes time.
I think they basically like contracts you cannot use them at the same time because
I keep thinking of VM
modifying the
VM
role is actually modifying the results of the profile.
Yes, so
yes, but
the
since sampling is incorrect anyway,
different
you can
from
filter
the
out sampling
so
on the
that's why mission control is way better than Visual VM.
Okay.
And that's the reason why JRP was always better.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point.
So this is not right, you just do some profiling, but if you remember some sort of heat dumps and stuff like that, then this profiling results are
dramatically
better. I'm not sure how
to sampling was. You hit a safe point, for example, minor dump detection.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's just, for instance, in this stack trace, imagine that those four methods were instrumented, so we are tracing
part of your application,
and
the
rest
more likely to
would
happen
be
in that case. So you get a first
sample
impression of what might take on.
I cannot imagine how it will be a correct result except removing the tape second time.
So and the numbers
basically
have
a first branch of sampling and then
a
second branch of the instrumentation.
That's just having the process of
qualifying.
It needs to run that.
Especially
for that.
Yeah.
Choice.
That's the reason why sampling is kind of
for example,
very low overhead.
Just the fact that
he
some
of them anyways,
if you basically profile, if you do sampling, your just-in-time profile still works. You can inline the hotspots and translate them. Some methods will not ensure the stack list because they are inline. If you run the sampling, it's much
easier.
It's
I'm not sure that the DTRA support has been there for 5 years or so, but it's a large Linux support.
Yeah, Linux has quite less DTRA support for Java.
Yeah,
so
but
there are a lot of sample ones.
Okay. So if my application process would have been instrumented in this stack trace would have been sampled. This is what I mean. And it's not the application of the results, it's just one request. So you get like a sample of this request, but then only some interesting methods could be, you know, instrumented. This is what I meant.
JDK dynamic proxy.
If you are talking about data aggregation, then
totally
I agree that
just
would not just be wide. If this stack trace is actually twice longer, because I only added Spring packaging here.
Yeah, I just said it. It totally looks like Spring. The longer the class name, the better it is.
I can add Hibernate as well. Add some more. So this is how you see what is the overhead of the frameworks. Maybe something else? Maybe you can tell me about object allocation. I haven't been researching that much of that. How often do you look into memory?
Pretty often.
Oh, you do.
So what exactly information are you looking for? You know, allocation rate, mutation rate?
I think pretty much allocation rate, which objects are allocated the most.
What is the general
age of the object?
Okay.
From my point of view, like regarding this tool, I would be interested, like, okay, here's the request, it generates that, it requires that much memory, it allocates that much memory. Then it doesn't have any connection to garbage collection, let's say.
So, right, typically garbage collector requires they line up things in time. So you know, in this moment of application time, your allocation rate went up, I know, 3x to this level. But this does not correspond to the logic of your server. You need to do this yourself. So you know, this event happened in this trigger. You can. I don't know any tools that would do that. So you can do all sorts of print GC stamps, you know, print GC details, that kind of stuff. And it's a file lock. And there are a bunch of parsers out there that allow you to plot this into a kind of nicer graph where you see the allocation rate.
Yeah, that's the shameless plug to curve. Sansom, pretty much the best tool you can find out there.
I don't know, is it in theory, is it possible to measure number of memory that generates some queries? So there could be a lot of lazy utilization or something like that. So you could maybe find some average numbers, but...
Well, you can still measure how many objects are created in the term of the request.
You have like a time constraint anyway, so you have the start, you have the end, and in the middle of how much.
Yeah, there might be some other allocations going on, but still you see an average how much allocations are going through.
But benchmarks are typically done per VM, not per thread. So
that's true.
If you have multiple threads,
yes, if you have some background.
Yeah,
that's what I said. So there might be some side allocations, but still, if you run the same request for a few times, you see in average, if the same object always gets created or the same object type. So it might not be a one-shot request measuring, but multiple views of the same request.
Adaptive or something.
Yeah.
No, that JIT can do funny things with object creation.
Well,
so,
I know.
So
escape analysis and kind of thing.
Right, escape analysis, and so while in the beginning it does everything as you would expect, you know, create object and you know, do this stuff and then gets eliminated, then over time it can do a lot of various optimizations, how to use objects, you know, eliminate objects, you know, escape analysis, and I guess you're interested in more in long living objects. So the short living objects they can show up in the graph and you know like spikes of creation, but in most cases, unless you're there's some very specific applications like here, in most cases, you know short living objects are cheap and therefore even though you have high allocation rates, but if they live
I hate
short
that term.
Yeah,
I hate that term. Which allocation is not cheap.
It is cheap.
No, it's not.
It's way cheaper. It's way cheaper than
there are some countries for the allocation.
Yeah, it's
cheaper.
Really cheap. It's not cheap. The allocation might be cheap, the garbage collection isn't. So the claim is actually absolutely wrong. It's cheaper than allocation in C++, besides you're writing your own garbage collectors kind of thing.
well, it's getting off the track, I guess.
So
for
memory, what parts of memory you could think of memory as a whole,
huh?
Or in parts of memory, let's say you are using JBoss rules, right? There is a session factory that is holding those term objects inside, you know, itself and populates the memory with those objects. Maybe you want to see in there. And in this tool, we tried with HTTP session. So you might have like inside what is in the session for this particular user who is using this application at this moment of time and browse into it and see the difference between the requests.
Yeah, I think that is actually pretty interesting for session using web applications because you see how your session grows over time.
Yeah.
And if there's some object
we don't have
in mind,
but we only compare to the previous state.
Yeah, but still, you might see that there is some object you don't expect to be in the session because it's captured from the context.
That's pretty common,
yeah.
Especially in the time of the applications that were created between 2005 and 2010.
Yeah.
It was very popular to put everything in the session.
Yeah, or you just capture something from the context you're not aware of.
So for that, we actually have thresholds. Either your session grows too fast, so you specify the delta, or the total amount, and then the tool will also notify you that something is happening. But there might be other regions in your memory
not only the user session, but let's say Drew's session or something like caches, Hibernate caches, that might be interesting to see, like, oh, it grows too fast or whatever. Depends. With caches,
well,
maybe it's not the size of the cache, but rather just to see the internals and cache hits, cache misses.
If you're using that thing in one request, it's really hard to understand how much memory it took in cache, because you have to heat up all caches and everything. So maybe for you start up your application, you're a developer, you started your application with XRebel, and you see, oh, its cache grows a lot for Kubernetes cache, but you understand
for
after...
For the first time.
Yeah, but yes. After maybe 100 requests, that will be, it will stay at the same level.
Well, it's easy to actually track that, either it's a warm-up or it's a real usage. The cache was empty before, so it's a warm-up. That's fine.
So you are doing that for developers who really run it one time to see what's going on and don't really care about 100 times to until it will heat up. Yeah.
Maybe. Well, the initial idea was that we add more functionality to JRebel. We wanted, like, if you know about JRebel, it just like preloads stuff, right? But it doesn't provide you any information about what happened, or if something didn't happen, then might write something, okay, error, I didn't do that, and that's it. And we made this prototype into JRebel first as a plugin, just to see that something is happening. And then we actually realized that people would, we were asking, showing it to the users, and we realized that actually a separate product. So we decided, okay, let's separate them and add more stuff to this one, like what is happening really in your application in development mode. So you get something in between the profile, normal profiler and APM. You wanted to say something?
If you would disable the garbage collection during the request, you could basically see how much the allocation there, but it's not. If you want to run this in a production, it's not the option.
Okay. Is it possible to disable garbage collection?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Just as a,
many
as
ways.
A normal user can do that.
XMX zillion.
Yeah.
There you go.
Oh, okay.
Well, not only that.
Season,
at least in Hotspot, I know. At least two ways of doing it from Java code. At least in a short amount of time. I'm not sure how long it lasts, but...
Okay, XMX Zillion works only on some operating systems.
No, it works everywhere. XMX is a standard feature. So XMX is basically give a lot of RAM to your Java app. And GC always triggers on reaching certain thresholds.
Yeah, but that means you have to have
a startup checks that there is enough memory blocks.
Yeah,
well, okay. Memory.
Right. If you can't allocate that much memory to your application, then yes, you XMX will fail.
Yeah, and it should hire the young generation a bit.
Right. You can tweak various parameters to delay garbage collection, and in fact that is how a lot of spec records were set.
Okay, so it's not deterministic. The question was rather, can you do it for sure?
For sure?
In JNI.
Just deterministically disable garbage collection that you are sure that during this request it will not be executed.
I think just using JNI.
Kill garbage collection thread.
Without assembling your own JVM.
What you could do is not to disable the garbage collection, but check if it actually was run during the request and show the information only in the garbage collection.
So I'm not aware of ways to do that.
You are saying you are using JProfiler, but...
No, we are not using
JProfiler. You are using JavaAgent.
Yes.
And it's kind of problematic to run this sort of stuff in the production. Or even sort of staging servers for many corporations, because you have to be certified partner and stuff like that, and it takes ages to get that.
It's not about production. Right?
Basically, I think you can go to get most of this information from the log files, Hibernate log files, whatever session. web server and stuff like that, and if you somehow aggregate the slope files in this way and somehow record the screen of the browser, or it's sort of basically put all those informations together in this sort of interactive way, and you could actually replay the last sessions, it would be absolutely nice over that.
So it's not really, you know, again, what's contributing to stalls is not really the garbage collection itself, but rather stop the world causes that are associated with the garbage collection. Because garbage collection can occur, well, there are at least concurrent garbage collectors that can do their job in parallel with your mutators, with your Java threads. So it's
if
all
your
about
allocation rate is not too high.
If you stop the world, and there are, you know, it's this whole lot, this whole talk about, you know, when stop the world causes actually do take place. But one of those is mutation rate, so that's how often you change your references to your objects.
It's not just stop the world, like in many, you know, on many servers, the garbage collector is consuming 10-20% of the CPU, and it's producing these sort of spikes, and it's simply making
the garbage collector is running because you create garbage.
Yeah.
Yes, but
because
if you can prevent creating garbage on the first place, it's...
What?
If you could prevent creating garbage on the first place.
Which is something that some customers apparently do, so... There are some folks out there, some teams that generate that work in projects that generate zero new objects. I mean, they generate everything up front. There are object pools. There is all sorts of machinery
that they eliminate. What I want from this tool.
That's not Java.
If you have a simple page, I want a red flag. If I know it's allocated like 2 gigabytes of garbage, which needs to be collected, and if it just shows red flag, there is too much allocation. That's good enough.
So you want an analysis that shows allocation rate spikes?
Yes.
Yeah, that might be interesting.
But what is
a spike actually?
Right. We can show you various spikes, but then how do you correspond this to your application that it's that request that generated this much garbage? So because if VM thinks in terms of timing,
yes.
It happened between this and this second millisecond. And you need to then somehow to lay over your...
This is just supposed to be some sort of warning thing. So it tells you that your SQL query is running 10 seconds, it's probably something wrong with it. So this, if there will be similar situation for the garbage, for the allocation, and I know then 1 gigabyte of garbage was allocated, that's good enough for my information.
Yeah, for that you can do that with most profilers, I guess. So you get a time plot over the amount of, well, you don't know if it's garbage or not until it's collected,
until it's
walked.
Right. In this case, it doesn't matter if it's garbage or no. It's always garbage. Even if it's garbage collected, it's garbage as well because it's affecting CPU. If it's not collected, it's memory leak, so it needs to be anyway.
Like this.
Yeah, an interesting point of view.
Yeah,
eventually it will be garbage.
Garbage collector is working
asynchronous
to your request, so the request there's some data in the memory, but garbage collector could run maybe after 10 requests,
yes,
so
I know,
he don't have any reference, so that's part of the memory was garbage from request a few seconds ago. So
why not? If you mark that. If you annotate that object,
is not that easy.
What I'm
it means you have
to
walk all of the collected elements, which can be a pain in the ass.
Yeah, you can convert all object into some kind of soft reference and do processing for every this reference on that.
Yeah, you
collector.
Can reference queue it. And
yeah.
But that creates a lot of more garbage.
Yeah. But
okay.
Basically, what I'm trying to say is that you can get much better performance if you just try to avoid excessive allocation. And if this tool would just tell me...
So how does it work on application side? So you just decline some requests that would require too much objects to be created?
Well, for start, for example, me when I'm running some sort of program and I'm evaluating framework,
uh-huh.
I'm looking at the memory consumed by this framework.
Mm-hmm.
And if I see too much garbage collection, CPU usage, or big spikes in the memory allocation, it's a big red flag for me. Because basically the garbage collection, it's also sort of prevents, you need to add additional hardware and you need big reserves and stuff like that. And I'm not saying our garbage collection completely, like obviously you can do that, it's huge cost, but if you just try to be some sort of aware of the problem.
Yeah, I do think about that.
What I want to know basically, I would imagine this.
But if there is an external tool that kind of talks to your application, and if it detected, you know, high allocation rate, it would, let's say, decrease the priority of your thread. So decreasing priority means your thread gets to run less, means it generates less objects. You know, would that kind of solve your problem? Because then, you know, you run the thread less, it generates less memory, you know, less objects per unit per second per minute, and that kind of helps your overall GVM.
Something like that. Basically, what I would like from this tool, take the memory, take the amount of consumed memory at the beginning of, before the request, at the end of the request, check if certain conditions were met, no garbage collection was run during the page generation, no other web pages were interfering, the caches are full and stuff like that. And let's say this sort of web page could allocate 200 megabytes of garbage, which should be normal, but if it's allocated 10 times over this threshold, just give me that one, and that's it.
Yeah, I guess we're getting again off track. Maybe we can talk about this offline.
Oh, no, it's not off track. Whatever happens, the only thing can happen.
Yoda too. But the truth, I don't want to answer. I need to think about it.
How much time do you actually have? Is it over yet?
I don't know.